So here I was coming on the air thinking to myself, I do not want to spend another day talking about George Springer and then having him not in the lineup, because we did that yesterday. Mm. The first part of writer's block about it as well. So I'm watching the game last night. Vladdy hits a home run. First home run, I'm going, man, you know what would be great? Vladdy went off today, so I don't have to spend an hour taking calls on George Springer and where you'd hit him and what will his impact be.
Mm.
Well, he did that, but Barker, I did not expect to see Vladdy go off like that. Like, there's going off, and then there's going off, and that was spectacular. I don't know. There's no other word. Special. Blah blah blah. Mm. That was spectacular.
Yeah. What do you think the ceiling is for Vladdy? Where do you think he can go as a player?
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you the discussion we had, and it is walk-off Wednesday, and the numbers are 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590-590 is a text line. And I'm asking the question that I'm going to be honest about what I think about Vladdy in a few minutes, but the question I'm asking you is, and throw out the usual caveats, small sample size early in the season, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, hitting in a minor league ballpark, all that good stuff. Mm. Just throw that out there for now. But the question I'm asking you is this. We've talked a lot. Everybody's talked a lot about the expectations for Vladdy coming into the major leagues. And let's be clear. The expectations were that he would be on the same level as Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna, and Juan Soto. They may have been wrong. Doesn't matter. Those were the expectations. You were the number one prospect overall in baseball. That's what people expect from you. So let's throw that out right now. So my question to you today, again, 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Did Vladdy need to change your mind this year? And has he changed your mind this year? And do you think, because I think you're all smart baseball fans out there, you know, and one robin doesn't a spring make, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think there is a chance that we are now seeing Vladdy ascend to the same plateau as Fernando Tatis Jr. and Ronald Acuna, who, by the way, the Braves are in town against the Blue Jays later on this week.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. And Juan Soto. Now, again, the number's 416-870-0590. 888-666-0590, *590, 590, 590 is a text line. Here's what Barker and myself were talking about. John Schneider joins us, by the way, who's Vladdy's minor league coach. You know all that. You've seen us on social media. I think we've been pretty clear, or I've been pretty clear all along. And I said this, so I'm going to have to put my hand up here, that I thought the face of this team, the face of this franchise, the alpha dog, whatever you want to describe it, I thought it was going to be Bo Bichette for a variety of reasons. It's not that I was ready to write off Vladdy, although I did write this, and I did think that this was a big year for Vladdy. Vladdy needed, I think, to establish himself as an everyday position player this year, capable of being one of the best hitters in baseball. He did. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying. I'm not saying that the Jays were going to trade him or, you know, he's going to have to retire or anything like that. But I'm saying that I think I was pretty clear in that. And I think I was right about that. But we had this discussion, Barker, before he came on. We've always had it. How many times have we looked at each other and said, you can sign one of these young guys to a big contract. Who's it going to be? And we've always said Bo.
Yeah.
We've always said Bo.
Mm-hmm.
Better body,
premium position,
yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. A guy, you know, maybe capable of hitting for a better average than Vladdy, all that stuff.
Yep.
So you, like a jackass, asked me about a minute before he went in the air. All right. You got one guy you can give a multi-year contract to in this organization right now. Who do you give it to? The first time in 2 years that I looked at you and said, okay, are we talking about right now? Because if we're talking right now.
Just took 1-3.
Vladdy.
Home run game for you to change your mind. Totally.
You know what? No, it's not just that. And I'll tell you what happened last year. Because I like if I say or write something and a person does it, I like giving them credit for that. One of the things I said last year, and I pointed this out when I did Blue Jay Central late in the year, because I got tired of people talking about Vladdy's weight. Like, we were all talking about Vladdy's weight, but I said, you know, let's at least give the kid credit for losing weight in season. I don't care if it's 10 pounds, 12 pounds, 20 pounds, 30 pounds.
He was trying.
He was trying.
Yeah.
The other thing, he played every game. There are only 9 other players in baseball who played every game. And I know you're going, well, Jeff, he was managed, he DH'd, he played. For- yeah. I get all that. But I said early in the year, I wanted to see Vladdy get through a full year healthy. Now, 60 games isn't 162, but it constitutes a full year. And there were a hell of a lot of players in baseball who couldn't get through that 60 games healthy. So I gave Vladdy credit for that, and I started to change my thinking then. And then, of course, he shows up in spring training this year. He's in great shape and whatever. Everybody I know in baseball has always shown up in camp in great shape, and then a lot of them proceed to go out and blow their knees out and their hamstrings out, and you go, well, fat lot of good being in great shape did. But so it's not just a 3-homer game, Kevin. He's better at first base than I thought he'd be.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the worst defensive infielder in that team. He may be the best defensive infielder in that team, depending on how the line is. But he may be the best defensive infielder in that team. So I right now I gotta say Vladdy. How do you feel?
Yeah, well, I think with the struggles at shortstop with Bo, now you're starting to have questions on 10 years from now, is Bo your shortstop? And I can't really answer that question. But if you come to me and said 10 years from now, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. your first baseman? I could probably stamp that and say 100%. Yeah, I can deal with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I can deal with that. So you check that off the list. Has he made adjustments offensively at the plate? Look, it's a small sample size.
Last night. And this is the thing, slider to left field, fastball to center field, fastball to right. It was like batting practice. It was like watching a guy take batting practice.
I yell and scream all the time on this show until this team lineup-wise goes up and hunts heater. We can't take this lineup serious. You're starting to see the boys do it. The boys that matter. You see Randall going up looking heater. Mm-hmm. You see, but you know why you know they're looking heater? Because when they get a breaking ball and a fastball count, they look like they're looking fastball. They're a little out in front of it. They don't look like they're looking for it. They look like they're set up for, you know, you look for a fastball, you get a changeup, you take a fastball swing at it. That's sort of what they're starting to look for now. You're seeing, Vladdy, that home run he hit to right field, and I know it is a minor league park. That's not Vladdy's fault.
No.
That was 97 miles an hour, a little bit away.
Yeah.
Head on the ball, ready to hit, athletic position. You know, the little foot, and I did this on Instagram. The foot being on time, his front foot, allows him to get to his hand slot quicker. He's repeating that over and over and over again. It's not that big move he makes with his hands because he's a little early with his feet. I said this before when I first saw him, how early he is with his setup. And he waits. And the longer he waits, the lazier his hands get and his hands drop. Barrel gets straight up and down. And then he has to force his hands back up to get it to the slot where he wants to attack the baseball from. It's now for me, it's just refining what you want to look for. You know, occasionally it's okay for a guy that can hit, has electric bat speed, has the hand-eye coordination that Vladdy has. Now, occasionally, not all the time, you can go up and hunt a pitch. The guy throws 60% curveball, maybe you go up and look for one.
Mm-hmm.
That separates you from everybody else. But it's you know, am I with you on who you give it to? Probably not. I want to give it to both of them. I like both of them.
Well,
but the answer, you know, the 3-home-run game sure does.
That's like
should.
The ultimate unhot take. I'll be with you then. I'll give it to both of them, too. Of course, but you told me to choose.
I did. So you're choosing Vladdy just because of the 3-home-run game?
I don't
you
can know say if I'm going to choose game. Vladdy. I mean, I don't know.
You know what it is. It is a great conversation to have because that only means that you have two really, really good young players that you want to back the truck up to.
Chris in Regina wants to know what you think of the fruition of his gather.
I just said it. When the foot is
I just wanted to say fruition of his
gather. Yeah, when the foot
fruition
is
fruition of your swing, boy, that's a big word for me.
And yeah, it is when it's on time and he doesn't do it early and has to stand there and wait on the pitcher. Look, It's you could say, you know, the launch angle thing. Everybody wants to yell and scream. His launch angle's up. He's not hitting the ball on the ground. Yeah, there's reasons why he's doing that. Anybody can flip it through baseball reference and tell you that he's hitting the ball in the air more. Well, how's he doing it? Well, he's doing it because he has a little bit better rhythm and getting the hands to the slot a little bit quicker.
I mean, we could do – there's a whole – that was a historical game last night for Vladdy Jr. And I know most people have – you know, the social media has dealt with that and you know, and talked about it. But we got to talk about a couple of things, at least to put it in context. First of all, his dad never had a three home run game. His dad's first grand slam was at the age of 26. Vladdy, of course, is 22. I do find it kind of cool that both Vladdy Sr. and Vladdy Jr. hit a home run off Max Scherzer. Mm-hmm. The seventh youngest player in Major League history to hit three home runs in a game. The others are Mel Ott, Hal Troski, Eddie Matthews, Al Kaline, Boog Powell, and Corey Seager. He's the youngest to do it with seven RBIs. He did it off a guy, Max Scherzer, who's one of the best pitchers in the game and was coming into the game with a 17-inning scoreless streak. And, oh, by the way, in the first inning, he got Vladdy to ground out into a double play. So I wanted to ask you this, yep. Kevin. So the grand slam was a slider to left.
Mm-hmm.
The second home run was a fastball to center field.
Yeah.
The third home run was a fastball to right field. Which of those impressed you the most?
Yeah, okay.
The slider. Tell me about hitting, take a guy like Vladdy, because the others are fastballs.
Yeah.
But taking a slider to left, talk to me about that with the bases loaded.
It's a cement mixer. It's a little bit of a hanger. I will say there's accumulation of a bunch of things there. You heard Tabby talk a lot about when they were watching batting practice, how yes. many home runs line drive wise he was hitting to center field. And then after the game, the interview that Hazel gave with him, he was saying that he was really struggling with his hands and his timing. And that's why he was trying to hit everything as hard as he could to center field. And then you watch him in the game and he goes left center, right field, not the left field line, not the right field line. Point being is a kid that's 22 years old that understands the issue that he's having in batting practice is trying to fix it in the big part of the field. Don't try and get cute and go outside the box. I know what my strengths are. My strength is staying inside the baseball and being on time. If I can do that in batting practice, hopefully I do it enough it carries over to the game. Now, which pitch means more? I think it's more about who he's doing it off of. You know, Max Scherzer's coming into that game, and FP was on with us. And saying, how's he going to attack a young lineup who's aggressive? He's going to make it look like a strike. There's no question of how these pitchers are trying to get these right-handed hitters out.
Yeah.
Fastballs, sliders away. It's no big deal. But I will say this. He showed his hand a little bit too much for me. First at bat, he throws him four sliders. He gets him to roll out for the double play or whatever it was. His second at bat, that was the third slider he saw on that at bat. So he's seen six sliders already before he hit the homer. That's a lot of information. I know which way it's spinning. I'm on time for the heater. I can get my foot down in an athletic position. I see it out of the hand. I recognize it's a slider. I get that little weight, and then I get my follow through.
If Vladdy was slumping, does he see all those sliders, or does he see more fastballs?
I think that's the approach that most guys are going to give right-handed hitters is the hard stuff and the slider that starts as a strike and goes down and away. Now, if that was a good slider, you probably don't see that, but that was a cement mixer. Now, you give Vladdy credit. He's not chasing the good ones.
And no, he hit a home run.
He waits on one that's not a good one.
Yep.
That's what good hitters do.
Yeah. It is walk-off Wednesday, 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Jim in London. All right. Do we need to start seriously thinking, Jim, about putting Vladdy on the same level as Fernando Tatis Jr., Juan Soto, and Ronald Acuna? Yes, I know it's early, but it's sports talk radio, and we can overreact. No one's going to care if we overreact.
No, I honestly don't. Like, I'm really happy with Guerrero. Like, his body type, like, the work he put in the offseason is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I think Acuna's been doing it for 4 years now, and Tatis has been doing it for, like, three, and Soto, I forget exactly. Like, I know they've been doing it for an extended period of time. And then, like, for example, like, even if he is at their level offensively, like, Acuna is like a star center fielder in the field.
Yes.
And, like, Tatis is a very good fielder as well. Mm-hmm. And Guerrero, even though he's done a great job at first, I still put more value as a shortstop or as a
that's fair
center yeah. fielder.
No,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, Jim, great call. Thanks for that. That's absolutely fair. Clearly, when you talk about a player's value, you have to look at his position. I think that's entirely fair. And they're different players, too. All three of those guys are different body types than Vladdy.
Yeah, it's a solid take. Well, the question you have to ask yourself offensively, what will it take Vladdy for people to look at Vladdy the way they look at the Tatis Juniors and the Sotos and the Acuna Juniors? That's the question, because he's not an elite defender.
No. So he's got to be outrageously good offensively.
45 and 100-plus kind of thing.
He's got to be Carlos Delgado-ish. Got to be Carlos Delgado-ish. Because that was a knock against Carlos Delgado is – you know, his best position was home plate. He's got to do that. I will say this. I went back and looked because we had a conversation with Dante Bichette last year about Vladdy. And I remembered him saying something vaguely about this, but it kind of went in, as sometimes happens, it went in one ear and came out the other. But he was talking about Vladdy Jr. And here it is. And I remember we asked Dante, okay, Vladdy, high average guy with a lot of home runs, what would be good? And he said, there's no reason Vladdy can't be Dave Winfield. Using that as a comp, a guy who can go to all fields, hit home runs, basically be the guy, basically be whatever he figures he wants to be, whatever he's comfortable being. You can reach that level.
How about consistency offensively? I said Albert Pujols.
You said
last night after the game, and he's a first baseman. You know, when he's not hitting, how does he help the team win games?
I think earlier in his career, he was a pretty good first baseman.
Plus defender, okay. Yeah. You can be a good picker at first, meaning if you have Bo Bichette playing shortstop and the throws are bad, you got to be good with your feet work, soft hands, that kind of thing. Can he help the team win games when he's not hitting?
Great point. Let me ask you this. What does a plus defender look like at first base? Because I know what it looks like at shortstop.
Yeah.
I probably have a pretty good idea. Scott Rowland is what it looks like at third base.
Lyle Riverbay at first for me was, you know, a guy that can take away the hole between first and second.
Mm-hmm.
A guy that has great feet work. A guy that is a good communicator with the pitcher. You can put all pick plays on a guy that's struggling at on the mound to get an easy out that way. It's not taking your at-bats to the field. It's – again, you know, it's more today because of the shift and the way they line guys up. It's more about having good feet work and having soft hands around the bag so you can help pick up guys with the throws. Because you got to remember now, when the shortstop is somewhere way over in the hole with a pull-hitting right-handed hitter, that throw is longer for them.
Mm-hmm.
But throw may not be in the air, so the first baseman has to be a better picker and that kind of thing. So that's an interesting question.
590-590 is a text line. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Jeremy from the Annapolis Valley in Nova Scotia. Thank you for listening, Jeremy. We hope you're doing well. Hey, fellas, longtime listener, first time writing in. Love the show. Look forward to listening every day. I always like to get that in. Admittedly, I had been disappointed in Vladdy's performance in his first couple of seasons, but recognize that he has the elite tools to be a great ball player and hitter. He just needed the time to mature as a professional. I think he has proved he's matured after the offseason he had last year and the results we're seeing earlier in the season. I think that's a good take. To your question, if Vladdy is in the same company of other young stars like Tatis and Soto, I would have to agree he is approaching this level, but I wonder how much of his recognition is related to lack of coverage from the U.S.-based media. Ultimately, MLB decides who they see as their poster boys, and I don't think they're giving enough content to Vladdy or the Jays as a whole. He's becoming the player everyone talked about in the minors. It's time for MLB to put on notice and market him. I agree with your first part. I have to respectively disagree with the second part. Major League Baseball has been all in on Vladdy. MLB Network.
Yeah.
Devoted, they sent Carlos Pena down to AA to watch Vladdy hit. Vladdy has gotten more love out of the U.S. media than any Blue Jays player early in his career, than any Blue Jays player I can remember. And that includes Roy Halladay.
Okay,
that includes Roy Halladay.
Quite frankly, just say it like it is. It's performance driven. If he hits a bunch of three-run homer games,
yep.
They're going to cover him more.
Ryan and Markham. So are we now prepared to agree that perhaps Vladdy can reach the level of a Tatis Jr. or an Acuna or a Soto?
Yeah, well, I was getting a little impatient myself, but now I'm drinking the Kool-Aid for sure. I think he's the real deal. But I actually wanted to give some credit to this bullpen today because, like, I was just thinking, like, I keep waiting for them to implode, and they still haven't, knock on wood. But I'm wondering, and I got actually another question after this if I have a second, but I was wondering, how many closers out there are making more than the entire Blue Jays bullpen, not including Roar, because he was signed as a starter?
Yeah, I'd have to do some, that's a pretty good question. I'd have to do some digging on that, but now you got me. I'm going to look into that. I cannot promise I'll have time to do it today.
Okay.
But I like that idea very much. We'll look into it, and we will get back to you on it.
Well, I listen to you guys every day, so that would be cool. I wonder if I could just ask a quick baseball general question.
Go ahead, Mr. Barker.
Obviously, yeah, there's so many strikeouts in the game today and all that. What do you think if they lowered the mound a little like they did in the 60s? Would that potentially allow for a little more contact?
A couple of things with that. I think it's more about two things don't make a right. And to have... You're putting more pressure on pitchers to think about how they're going to go about getting people out, and that takes away from how good they've made adjustments and how they're attacking hitters. I don't think that's the right answer. I do think it is you start paying guys for it's okay to fillet a fish ball where they ain't standing. Inside out something. And yeah, Randall Grichuk yesterday.
Yeah.
Do you see?
Sorry, fillet a fish ball. That's a new Barkerism. Put it down there.
You see Max when he took the little inside out check swing sort of thing, just trying to, he got fooled on a pitch. But all he was doing when he got fooled was stay back, keep your hands back behind the baseball, and just try and put the barrel to the ball. That was it. And hit it where they ain't. And he basically hit it right to the second baseman, and he got a hit out of it. It's those kind of things. You start rewarding guys for hits. Hits matter. And if they do that, a little bit more of that, that's the thing. I don't like them moving the mound back. I don't like them making the mound smaller. You know, again, it's one of those things where when a pitcher starts doing that and he's not throwing as hard, and then he tries to make himself throw harder, that would probably mean you're going to see more injuries, and baseball didn't want that.
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590, 590-590 is the text line. Nobody in this organization has seen Vladdy Jr. at his best more than John Schneider. He is a Blue Jays coach. He'll join us next. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. *591, 888-666-0590, 590-590, the text number. Game two of the Jays series against the Washington Nationals goes tonight at TD Ballpark in Dunedin. We've just been told that George Springer will meet the media today via Zoom call at 3:30.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Wagner has tweeted out that his sources are telling him that George Springer will be in the lineup tonight. No indication yet as to which position he'll play.
Yep.
But if this is the same source that told Ben yesterday that he would not be in the lineup, it's a pretty good source.
Yeah.
We got our own sources too, though.
We do.
And including our next guest, he's the Blue Jays coach, John Schneider. I was going to call you Vladdy Whisperer and Kevin Whisperer and Bo Whisperer, but that would be overselling you. Thank you for doing this. It's good to hear your voice again. Look, I'll ask you before we talk about Vladdy and Bo, et cetera, do I need to put my George Springer jersey on tonight? Like, can I do that? Cause I had it ready yesterday and then I had to put it back. Now it's out again this morning. Can I wear it tonight relatively safely?
I would say get it hung up in your office, and then right at 3:31, you can either put it on or keep it hung up.
Jesus, that's no good.
That's when he's beating the media. Is that good?
No, that's not good enough. Anyhow, well, let me put it this way: should I have my hand on it to put it on real fast, or should I like have already picked out the place I need to move it?
Oh man,
he's trying.
I know.
Okay,
that ain't working. It's all right. It's all good.
Okay, let's hypothetically say this, John. When he does come back, what does that do for Kevin Biggio in the lineup? Where would you hit Kevin when everything is equal?
I think you can put him anywhere, really. You know, I know George is comfortable at the top, and he's expressed that to Charlie and, you know, done that over the course of his career. But I think if you know, it just depends on who we're running out there on a nightly basis, where you kind of slide Kevin in. So it could be somewhere in the middle if Rowdy's not in the lineup. It could be, you know, somewhere just like a tick lower to kind of turn that lineup over to back to the top to George. So it gives Charlie a lot of options. We played around with it in spring training a little bit with Cav at the top and Cav in the middle. So we'll kind of see how it shakes out. But I think that it's a luxury for Charlie to have when we're working through those things.
Okay, Snides, you clear something up for me. All Vladdy had to do in the offseason was lose 40 pounds, and he was going to become the best right-handed hitter in the history of the Blue Jays. Am I right? That's all it took.
He definitely put himself in position to use that God-given ability, man. I think that what we're seeing now is just a combination of him being really, really talented and him working his tail off in the offseason to just give himself a chance to do this. So this is kind of almost a better version than what we saw in the minor leagues a couple of years ago in 2018. He's doing a lot of damage. He's finding himself in good counts. And the biggest thing, and I think I've talked to you about this, Kev, is, you know, he's gotten himself in great shape, and I think it just allows him to be much more athletic in the box. It allows him to stay in his legs. His toe tap is on time, which leads to him getting in good counts and recognizing pitches better. So I think having the confidence that he is physically in a great spot is just kind of rolling over into his at-bats as well.
Yeah, okay, you talked about the approach. The advanced side of it is kind of impressive. When you hear Tabby yesterday on the telecast talking about his BP and then you hear Hazel having the interview last night, and he was talking about he wasn't feeling good and he wanted to hit the ball as hard as he could to center field. Are you seeing him being able to, as a young guy now, me and you played together, it takes forever to figure out, you know, how to take a batting practice to the game. Are you starting to see a little bit of that approach in batting practice carrying over to the game for him?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been throwing to him for however many years, 5 years, and not because he hit three homers. I said it to him after BP and to Yermo. Yesterday was the most impressive batting practice I've ever thrown to him. And I know after the game, it was funny, he said he wasn't really feeling comfortable, but he's matured so much to where he's trying to hit the ball out to right center and to center. He hit about seven balls over the camera, over the batter's eye here yesterday, like four or five in a row. And it's cool to see him understand that he doesn't have to cheat. He doesn't have to pull, you know, at any ballpark, really. You're seeing it. You're seeing it translate into games for sure. You know, his last couple rounds, he always wants me to throw away, and he wants to work towards the, you know, the right center field gap. So he's just really kind of locked in with what he's trying to do.
You know, the other thing, John, that has really impressed me about Vladdy, and you know, obviously Vladdy's offense is going to be his calling card. But, I got to tell you, I've been impressed with the way he has taken to first base. I mean, there are a lot of things that he's still going to have to learn, a lot of instinctive things. But it's almost like you can see him processing stuff as a game goes on, and you can see him adapting and realizing that, okay, this guy right now is throwing the ball this way. I've got to do this. Like, I've seen him adjust to some of the issues the guys have had throwing the ball, and that's really impressed me, because, you know, some guys' reaction would be to kind of almost panic and freeze in that position, right, as opposed to sort of trying to be a little more active.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'm looking out of the field right now with him working with Louie right now. Early, and I think that he's really bought into it. Last year was kind of a crash course at first base, but he is really trying to own that position as much as he can right now. And he's, you know, the adjustments that he makes in the box and how he understands the game, he kind of does the same thing at first, you know, and he talks to Rowdy a lot. He talks to Louie a lot about certain things and certain plays, and he wants to get better at it, you know. So he's almost to the point now where he's disappointed if he doesn't pick a ball. So he's really trying to just complete his overall game, you know, while still getting some reps in at third base too, to keep himself sharp whenever, you know, if he's asked to go over that side too. So he's been doing it all. He's been, you know, locked in with his prep, and it's obviously showing in games.
Okay, I want to talk about reps. You just set that up perfectly for me. I want to talk about the guy at shortstop who's throwing it to Vladdy at first base. I saw for the first time three ground balls that he got, Bo, at shortstop. He caught them one-handed. I want you to explain to people, we talk about why a guy, you know, that can hurt him trying to catch everything at shortstop with two hands, why it's beneficial for him to catch it with one hand, and how hard is it in season to make an adjustment like that? You know, we've talked about this. He has a little issue with the backhand, the slow roller, the right. Ball hit hard right at him, that kind of thing. But how hard is it in season to make an adjustment like that?
Yeah, it's tough at the major league level for sure. But I think, you know, all we can do as coaches, and again, I'm sitting here watching him do work right now too, but I think that as many game speed reps as we can give him off of Fungo, off a machine, whatever it is, the better. You know, it's just, Bo is talented. Bo is competitive. Bo is athletic. And I think the more reps that he does at a full speed, the more he can just gain feedback and figure out where to position himself and what he needs to do. So it's like you said, Kev, it's those plays, it's those backhands sometimes, it's those, you know, balls that are hit on the ground over 100 miles an hour kind of right at you, and you go, what do you do? Do I sit back on it? Do I come get it? What do I do? Those are the things that we're working on daily with not just him, but with everyone. You know, Charlie's big on that and likes to have guys have a few days a week where they're taking really, you know, firm fungos to try to replicate as much game speed as you can. So it's a work in progress for sure, like everyone. And I think any player, not just Bo, they're still developing, you know, at every part of their major league career, and they're always trying to find the ways to get better. So it's cool to watch. And, you know, we're obviously confident in him and the adjustments that he's going to make.
Okay. I don't want to ask you what it would take for you to move Bo off of shortstop. That's not fair. But I do want to ask, is he capable mentally to, you know, have those adjustment periods playing the field and then go to the plate and be the guy at the plate that we all expect he can be?
Yeah, I think so. I think that the best thing that happened to Bo was probably going through about a 3-week struggle in Double-A in 2018, both offensively and defensively, and how to kind of handle it, how to continue to post every day. You know, I told him at that point in time, the minors, that I'm not taking you out, you're going to work your way through this. And we talk about it today, you know, that was good for him. And I think that when he's in the box, you know, he's got an awesome approach. He's got an awesome plan. He knows what he wants to do each bat. And, you know, he's a dynamic offensive player, and he's got no problem separating what's going on the field and what's going on in the box. So yeah. It may take a while, but soon you're going to look up and Bo's going to be hitting over 300 with some production, and you know, everything's going to be kind of where it should be.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left field, and I want to ask about offensively. Are you seeing one thing? I know he's a very long arm guy, and those guys, yeah, obviously, when they're free swingers like he is, he thinks he can put barrel to anything in the strike zone. You know, being short, sure, and quick to the baseball, is that easier said than done sometimes for him?
Yeah, I think when you look at guys like, you know, just the guy we're playing right now, Schwarber, you know, who's got these real short arms, and or even Kirk on our team, who it's tough to get long with the way that they're built physically. Mm-hmm. And Lourdes has got kind of those long levers, and everything kind of has to be really synced up to be short and quick. So I think that's what he's going through right now a little bit. It's kind of, you know, he's working tirelessly with Guillermo every day to try to shorten up that whole process that is his swing, his gather, and his go. But I think that the trend with him in 2019 and then last year in 2020, I think that he's got plenty of offensive capability and ability to just really, you know, when it clicks, I think he's one of those dudes. When he gets hot, he gets really hot. So when it all kind of just clicks together, he's going to be fine.
John, listen, we really appreciate your time tonight. I can't wait to see George Springer in the lineup.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I hope he's in there.
Damn.
I don't know if you know whether he's playing or not.
He was going to try to get it out of you, start to finish.
Thanks, John. Take care.
Thanks, Nats.
Be well.
All right, guys.
All righty. I tried.
You did.
I tried.
College try.
Damn. Blue Jays coach John Schneider.
Oh, boy.
He's tried. He is the best.
He is the best. They work very hard at their craft. It's not because of lack of effort. And it'll be interesting to see every little player has little things that they have to work on. Mm-hmm. The Lourdes Gurriel Jr. thing is very intriguing to me because of the long arms. It's very easy to walk up to a guy and go, hey, be short and quick to the ball. Okay, thanks, obvious. But how do I consistently get my lower half linked up with my knob and my steering wheel, which is my bottom hand, going direct to the baseball? It's not the easiest thing to do. And he's fighting. You can see. And when you see a guy like him trying to lay down bunts to get hits and just gain some confidence, to actually feel the ball hitting the sweet spot of the barrel, that's all he's trying to do there. It's not always about getting a hit when he does that. It's just about feeling it in your hands when it hits the bat, to actually know, okay, that's what it feels like, and then muscle memory to try and do it with a full swing. It'll be interesting to see if they give him consistent bats to see if he can work himself out of it.
The comment John Schneider made about Vladdy's, about the weight loss, was intriguing, because I know people have always said, well, I shouldn't say they've always said, but we have been asked, people have mentioned the social media, okay, he lost weight. What difference does it make? Well, you just heard John Schneider talk about how this allows Vladdy to be in a more athletic position in the box because there's less of him. There's less wiggling and wobbling and stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, and Ross Atkins made this point early in the year, and it was an obvious statement, but it was interesting hearing somebody in the front office say, you know, the other thing the weight loss does, it allows you to do the stuff you need to do on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. to repeat that in the game without getting tired. I mean, you know, it's if you're in better shape, mm-hmm. you can work out better.
And two, it's he's comfortable with his appearance.
That
is a huge, for me, that may be bigger than the other parts of it.
That's something only a former baseball player would know.
Yeah, I know. Seriously. You see baseball cards of me when I pop them up on Instagram, how skinny I looked when my first year in AAA. I think I sent out one of those. And then my last year, the difference my body looked. I didn't say I was giving up, but I wasn't as aware, you know, at the beginning, at the end, as I was at the beginning. So it's one of those things where it matters. It was a big deal. It's not something he needs to worry about now. Yeah.
It was the body version of driving a van, right? Nothing says you've given up in life more than driving a van.
There it is.
416-87. That's awful. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. 590 is a text line. We'll go back to it. Justin LeBlanc from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, has got maybe the easiest question we are going to get all day. I'm going to read it because I get the sense, Justin, you may be a new baseball fan. And this is, it's a question that I think other people have heard us use the phrase, they want to know what we talk about. Very simple baseball phrase. We'll let Barker deal with it next. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Walk-off Wednesday. The numbers are 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Justin LeBlanc in Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, wants to know what the hell is a fungo? Because we hear talk about fungos all the time. And I know folks around baseball are probably going, what do you mean? What the hell's a fungo? But we may be teaching somebody something here.
Yeah.
So, besides which, it's always fun having you describe something. It just is. So Kevin Barker is going to give you the definition of a fungo.
This is my definition. It is a really skinny, light bat that a coach uses so he can take 1,000 swings a day and hit ground balls, hit fly balls, and it doesn't wear him out. It's very hard to take up a normal bat and try and hit, you know, a ball where you want it to go.
Yeah, because you're throwing up the ball with one hand, quickly putting it on
there
the bat, and then whacking
it. You want it to be as skinny and as light as possible, so you can do that over and over and over again, and also hit it where you want it to go.
You ever seen one shatter?
When I'm getting it and hitting it on something, on purpose, because I didn't get a hit or something. But other than that, no.
There's an art to it too, by
because
the way.
They give.
Yeah, I know. There's an art to it. Like you got to if you ever get a chance to get the batting practice early. Watch the fielding drills. Like it is,
yeah.
There is a clockwork element to it, and you know, Brian Butterfield when he was the Jays guy. I mean, he would do. He turned it into a show
quickly.
It was so much
I had
fun.
A drill when I wasn't playing a ton in the big leagues, and I was in the big leagues. I'd show up early and I'd go out to the left field line, and I'd take a fungo with me, and I'd take one ball.
Mm-hmm.
I'd throw the ball in the air. I'd hit the ball with the fungo. I'd run as hard as I could to where I hit the ball to. I'd stop. I'd throw it in the air. I'd hit it back to the foul line or over. So I not only worked on conditioning, but I worked on the feel of how it felt to get backspin on the baseball. That's what the fungo does is
yes.
You could actually feel it more than you can on a normal bat because obviously the head's bigger on it.
Right.
And the fungo's got a little tiny head. So it's you're getting the backspin of the baseball, and I could feel it. And I just wanted to get that feel of it. So much of
baseball is
that.
About that, isn't it? That's what you were just talking about as well, sort of bunting, just to get the feel of
exactly
the bat,
right.
It's
muscle
the ball
memory.
On the bat.
The more I feel it, the more I know when I do it in the cage, and I can make that feel, oh, that it clicks in and I'm doing it right.
Bob in Toronto, what is up, my friend? And I will just ask you, are we at the point now with Vladdy that we can at least consider, at least visualize him being on the same level as players like Tatis Jr., Soto, and Acuna?
I am a big Blue Jay fan, and I'm a veteran. I'm one of your 80-plus callers. But I will say to you that I love Vladdy, and I love the Blue Jays, but not yet. Okay. It's 22 games into the season. Give it time. I'm hopeful that he'll make it. I don't think he will do it on the defensive side of the game, but I think offensively, yeah, he has a real chance to be one of the greats. And my question to you boys was to do with this 7-inning game recently with the Baumgartner no-hitter and so on. If the 7-inning game is not a regular game, what would you do in the scenario where a guy is pitching a perfect game and yet he's still in a 0-0 tie at the end of the seventh? They go into the eighth and they put, like they're doing now, a guy on second base. What does that do to his perfect game?
Yeah, listen, thanks for the call. Look, it's very clear to me, Bob. It's a regulated 7-inning game. We knew before the game it was going to be 7 innings long. It wasn't rain delay. There was nothing funky going on, except this is an agreement that the Players Association and owners have. It is a no-hitter. It's not a 7-inning no-hitter. It's a no-hitter. This was the length of the game you were supposed to play. You completed that game. You got a complete game for it. You completed that game, and on the scoreboard, there's a real goose egg under H.
Mm-hmm.
It is a no-hitter. It just is. There should be no argument about it at all. And in point of fact, I cannot believe that people are still arguing about this in baseball. I just can't. Jim in London. Ryan and Markham had the question. I may have given Jim in London credit for this. But you're both nice guys, so. Ryan asked the question about the Jays bullpen and wanted to know how many relievers were making more money than the entire Jays bullpen. Let's run down the Jays bullpen right now. Ty Tice is making $570,500. Ryan Barucki, $595,200. Trent Thornton, $592,900. Jordan Romano, $584,000. Tim Mays is $600,000. Tyler Chatwood, $300,000. Joel Payamps, $580,000. Rafael Dolis, $1.5 million. Anthony Castro, $570,500. David Phelps, $1.75 million. Julian Merriweather, who's hurt, $578,400. Total for that bullpen, $10 million, $10,921,500. This is from Lance Kennedy, producer. So $10,921,500. That's the Blue Jays bullpen. These are the relievers who make more. David Price makes $32 million. Kenley Jansen makes $20 million. Aroldis Chapman makes $17.2 million. Craig Kimball, $16 million. Will Smith, $13 million. Zach Britton, $13 million. Andrew Miller, $12 million. Jurys Familia, $11.6 million. And Liam Hendricks, $11.3 million. So there you go there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 relievers who make more than the Blue Jays bullpen. So thus ends the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. show. For today, we should know in half an hour whether or not George Springer will be in the line. George Springer's going to be in the lineup. The only question is he going to DH or be in the outfield. He's going to be in the lineup. He's meeting the media around 3:30 on a Zoom call. So what did I say? I wasn't going to believe it until I saw him in the actual physical form.
Don't say it.
Well, because, you know, Ben Wagner had it right yesterday, and he's got his folks telling him that he's going to be in the lineup today. Ryan, you walked us off with the call that made us do some work. Well, it made Lance Kennedy do some work. I just reported it. This is how you walked us off. Ryan and Markham.
I actually wanted to give some credit to this bullpen today because, I was just thinking, like, I keep waiting for them to implode, and they still haven't, knock on wood. But I'm wondering, and I got actually another question after this, if I have a second, but I was wondering, how many closers out there are making more than the entire Blue Jays bullpen?